You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on the brand new podcast app Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil. On today's show, we are going to talk about tonight's NBA draft lottery, preview that a little bit, talk about the Heat's odds to move up and maybe draft one of these top four or five guys, or if they're going to just stay at 13. And then we've got some Game of Thrones thoughts later on. But let's start with the conference finals, which start tonight with Warriors and Blazers, and then Bucks-Raptors on Wednesday. David, I thought this would be a good opportunity just to reflect on these playoff teams, because there's lessons to be learned when looking at the teams that have made it this far, things that the Heat can apply when it comes to team building, to rebuilding whatever this roster is. What have you taken away from these playoffs?
That's kind of an open-ended question. I'm not sure that I read this question beforehand. We talked about the possibility of discussing this, and I wasn't quite sure how to answer it because I was looking at this, and all of these teams did not follow any kind of a central path to where they are right now. And the one I was looking at, I mean, as far as what you could take out of this is that you probably need two things. And one is that there is no right way of building a team, that each of these teams, like if you can even include the Philadelphia 76ers, who were one bad bounce away on a Kawhi Leonard, you know, buzzer beating shot.
It was like three or four bad bounces. But
okay. Yeah. They were, you know, this close to getting into the Eastern Conference Finals, and they would have been in there despite the process and the variation of the process that we've seen over the past season. So there is no central way of doing this. Like for everybody talking about blow up the team, trade away this player and that player, get as many picks as possible. You know, I don't know that Miami can follow any one guidebook or style to rebuilding their roster. And so that was a big takeaway from it.
I mean, the Bucks drafted Giannis in the middle of the first round.
Absolutely.
So it's not, you don't need a top five. The Raptors never blew it up, despite people saying that they should blow it up
Kevin
over the last
O'Connor,
couple of years. But they ended up, Kevin O'Connor was the blow it up king. And the Raptors were able to do the best version of what the Heat probably want to do, package some players and upgrade at a single position. They did that. DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl. Shout out Jakob Poeltl. to go get Kawhi Leonard.
Have you been talking to OG Anunoby? Because mentioning Jakob Poeltl, it seems to be something that he's destined to do. He's determined at all costs to mention Jakob Poeltl. Every time you mention Kawhi coming in or DeMar being traded away, it's like, and Jakob.
And Jakob Poeltl, yeah. Well, you know, you wrote the definitive non-OG Anunoby profile. Or the definitive OG Anunoby non-profile. Because he would barely speak to you.
Yeah.
But every time he spoke to you, I guess, like, what, Jakob Poeltl was like 25% of every conversation, it sounds like, of all the words he spoke in every sense, almost.
You know, what do you like listening to? Jakob Poeltl suggested.
Warriors, obviously, they built it from the ground up, and then they signed Kevin Durant, so that's kind of a whole other thing.
Right.
And then the team that they're playing, the Blazers, really just, I mean, yeah, they've kept this core group forever together for a long time. They are in a similar cap situation as Miami has been over the last, you know, really just got screwed by that summer of 2016, and found a way to make some changes along the margins and just sort of ride their star power. And that would be the biggest difference between Portland and Miami, is that star power, and that they had a guy like Damian Lillard who got better every single year, and you had a guy like CJ McCollum who got better every single year. You can't really say Miami has had a person had one player get better every single year for as long as, you know, CJ and Damian have been doing it. You know what I mean? So, like, Miami's best player seems to change every season. That's not the case with Portland. Hasn't been really the case with a whole lot of these teams, you know, unless you bring Kevin Durant in now. Maybe he's better than Steph, depending on your definition of that. Kawhi, obviously, is now Toronto's best player. But to me, what stands out with all of these teams, not necessarily from a team-building standpoint, because it is obvious from the four teams, you can build a team in a variety of ways. I think that's what you're saying, is that there's no one right way to do it. A superstar can come out of the woodwork at any point. It could be the 15th pick in the draft. It could be the first pick in the draft. It could be the second point guard taken in Steph Curry or whatever.
Third.
Yeah, yeah.
Johnny Flynn, and I can't remember the other.
Shout out Johnny Flynn. We got Johnny Flynn, OG, and that'll be Ann Jakob Poeltl all in the first 5 minutes of the show. It's a record. The point is, you need a dude that just goes and gets shots. Just somebody that just gets buckets. And we talk about how I think that there's different eras of basketball, different things are important. And that's why I kind of wanted to bring up this conversation, because you could have said at one time you need a 7-footer who can rebound, block shots, protect the rim, and just get you a bucket in the paint. There, you know, that was an, I think there was a time where you just really needed an elite point guard who just got everybody involved. Right now, I think it's just anybody at any position who could just is a mismatch nightmare who cannot be guarded for whatever reason, whether that player is 7 feet tall or that player is basically just a master of, you know, pick and rolls like Damian Lillard or something like that, and has a 30-foot shot in his arsenal. You just need a player who can go get you a bucket when you need it most. We saw that with Toronto. Kawhi Leonard went and got them the bucket that they needed. We saw it with the Warriors, Steph Curry coming alive at the end of that Houston series. We saw it with Portland, with CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard just outplaying Denver's entire offense. Because at the end of the day, as much as Nikola Jokic is great and as much as we love watching him, he's not a bucket getter, right? He is a facilitator. And they don't really have a guy who could just give him the ball, he'll create his own shot, he'll make a challenging shot. And Portland has two of them. And then obviously Milwaukee has Giannis, who's just unstoppable. He's 7 feet tall, and he's a super slinky man, can just go get a bucket whenever you need him to. The Heat don't have that. And they don't have anybody that even fits that profile right now. So that, to me, is a lesson. If you're Miami, we could talk about, okay, they need this power forward, or you might need some rim protection help if Hassan Whiteside opts out, or if you trade him, or they could really use a backup point guard, whatever. All that stuff is superfluous. You could take care of all that stuff after. The first thing you got to do is go get the bucket getter, or figure out who that person is going to be, target that person, and go get that person.
Yeah, there's nobody on that roster who comes even close. I mean, I the closest, honestly, I'd have to say Dion. Right?
Yes, and that's a problem.
That is a problem because of the inefficiency, because of his, you know...
He's poor man's Eric Gordon, which isn't good.
No, it's not. It's not. Yeah, you don't want him to be the central part of your offense as far as getting buckets is concerned. So, I'm trying to think. You mentioned you were talking about Portland and you know, partly how their roster shakes up, and you know they have obviously some star level players there, and Dame Lillard, and maybe to a lesser extent CJ McCollum, but they also got lucky despite some questionable roster moves. They got they signed Myers Leonard to a lot of money. They drafted Zach Collins, who probably should not have been drafted as highly as he was.
How dare you?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
How dare you?
Zach
Collins was very close. He was, well, I mean, maybe you don't take him over Donovan Mitchell, who went at 13, but you know, 12 other players went above Donovan Mitchell. I thought Zach Collins has been really good for them in the postseason.
No. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying you don't trade him. You don't trade your first-round pick and a future first-round pick to move up to draft Zach
Collins. Well, it was two current. They had two picks in that first round, which ended up being Harry Giles and Justin Jackson. I think that trade turned out pretty well for them.
Well, okay. I mean, I think that's mostly on Sacramento being really bad at drafting. Yeah.
Also fair. Okay.
So you need a lot of luck, yeah. I think. But I was wondering, at what point did Dame become Portland's best player? Because that transition seemed like it happened from LaMarcus Aldridge to Dame Lillard.
As soon as Aldridge signed with the Spurs, he was their best player. You're saying it might have been even before Aldridge left?
It's possible, right? I mean,
that's, you could argue that. I think, yeah.
I don't see anybody else on this roster, as far as Miami is concerned, who is going to be able to take that leap. As much as I've hyped on, Josh Richardson for that role, I don't know if he's that player. It seems like Justice is probably the best suited for it, but I don't see him either. He is not a bucket getter. He might be at very best an elite playmaker or a very good playmaker.
He showed flashes of bucket getting. There is something there with him late in the season when you put him on the ball. He showed flashes of... You remember, he ended up getting that, like, weird mid-range leaner going.
Yeah.
But maybe here's the thing with Damian Lillard. He is transcendent when it comes to his shooting ability and his leadership ability. I don't know that's the case with Justice. I'm not saying he's not a leader, but you hear, like, Damian Lillard, people are like, even if he wasn't the best player when Aldridge was there, Aldridge is not a leader. He is a silent kind of, he's a soldier.
Correct.
And that's fine. You need those guys. But everybody was sort of clamoring for Dame to take that next step. Like, hey, go be the best player because you're capable of it. And Damian didn't want to do it. He deferred to LaMarcus because he was young. But Justice might have some strong leadership skills. I don't know that he's elite that way that Damian Lillard is. He obviously isn't the elite shooter. He's not transcendent in any way like Damian Lillard is. But maybe Justice could be more of a CJ McCollum type where he just works on his game a whole lot. and just picks up these weird crafty things. Like, CJ McCollum is not an elite athlete by any stretch. I wouldn't call him an elite shooter either. He's a good shooter. Not an elite shooter. You know, he's not pulling up from 30 feet. But he's got this weird mid-range game. He knows how to use angles really well. He's really smart. He knows when to be aggressive. He knows when to be passive and go to Dame. I think Justice could be more in that mold. Right? Maybe he's like your second guy who gets hot and you can ride him, like best case scenario, and just like picks up these interesting little crafty things in his game and gets better every year that way. Josh is more like a Chris Middleton to me. Mm-hmm. He's got to play off of somebody. Mm-hmm. But yeah, who's the Giannis? Who's the Dame? Who's that guy? The Heat don't have that.
No. No, I was just going to say that. I mean, it seems like if you're going to acquire that player, I don't know that anybody in the draft is going to fit that mold right away. Even if you were able to somehow miraculously leap into the first pick, I don't know that you make Zion Williamson the focus of your offense right away as far as getting buckets. Is he that type of player at the collegiate level even where you can just say, do whatever you need to do, and can he take that and translate into the NBA as a rookie?
Thing with Zion that always stuck out to me was how even R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish, and Trey Jones, who are these top recruits, right there with Zion,
they deferred
to him. And this was not... Like, Coach K did no coaching last year with Duke. Like, he didn't coach that team. He's like, you guys go and figure it out.
You guys are good. You play however you want to. And I'll take all the credit for it.
Right. And all the blame when they ended up flaming out. Oh, should have lost to UCF. But shout out John Dawkins. But
Go Knights.
Go Knights. Zion, like, they just defer to him. Like, and I think that's going to happen. There is a mutual respect that you look around this team and you're like, this guy's unstoppable. Let's just give the ball to him. I think that would happen at the NBA. I'm not saying it would happen with the Heat necessarily, who tend to run a more structured offense, but generally speaking, whatever team he lands on, there will be a level of deferring to Zion because he's so unstoppable. I think that's just going to happen. The way we saw it with, I'm not going to say he's next LeBron, but a similar way where LeBron was just such a freak athlete, so unstoppable and just so inevitable that he was going to get a bucket, that it was just the easiest way to play offense. Just give him the ball. He'll figure it out. So I think if the Heat were to move up in the draft lottery, which we're going to talk about next, you draft Zion, and then I don't know if you build the offense around it, but he does immediately become the focal point of that offense, I still think. I just feel like that's how basketball players are. Like,
I think, like, I kind of disagree a little bit because I don't even think LeBron in 2003 was that type of player. And that was a really, really bad Cavs roster that did not make the playoffs in his first two seasons, right? They had some lackluster talent there, and they, you know, they were expecting him to kind of be the superstar player, and they gave him enough freedom and room to accomplish that. But I mean, I think he still had to kind of fit in as far as personalities are concerned. But either way, the point is, and I think it's a good one, that they do need that superstar player.
And you're right. It's not going to happen. Like, that player isn't going to be in the lottery. Isn't going to be in the draft day one. Like, that's not going to you're not going to transform this entire group immediately and find a superstar on day one. But you could find your your future superstar. You could find the next Giannis or whoever it is. Like, just the future, and maybe superstar is asking for too much. The future best player on offense.
No, I think you need a superstar. I mean, we're talking about, if you're looking at Golden State, they've got two, right? Steph and KD.
Okay, yeah.
You got at least one in Portland in Dame Lillard, and you can even say a second one in CJ McCollum.
I think he's become that in the playoffs, yeah.
And Kawhi in Toronto.
That's it. Yeah, and Giannis. Kawhi and Giannis, you could say, are two of the top three players in the league right now. So.
Right. So, I mean, so superstar certainly is what you're looking for if you want to get to this elite level. And Denver, to their part of the problem, as you pointed out, is their best player is Nikola Jokic, and he is not a bucket getter. He did show signs of that earlier on, but Portland, to their credit, kind of limited what
he could get there, but just not. I think right he now. Has. He's not. He wasn't. He wasn't it. In this series, and that was the difference. Same with Jamal Murray. He could sometimes be that player, but you need that consistently for a 7-game series.
Right.
Let's take a break. Coming up next, the NBA Draft Lottery is tonight. Could be a game changer for the Heat like we're talking about. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Let's talk about ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place where you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, and they don't stop there, folks. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one, spotlights the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. The draft lottery is tonight, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time for your Eastern folks, before Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals starts at 9. We'll have a reaction pod for you following the lottery, but let's talk a little bit about it here, David. The Heat have been to the lottery 10 times in the history of their franchise. Of those 10 times, they have not moved up a single time. They've never moved up in the draft lottery, not once. Alonzo Mourning will be representing the Heat. Was that the right choice, David, to represent the Heat?
I don't think so, to be honest with you. I think he's more representative of that kind of tireless commitment to the work and all these different things, but not necessarily the best choice. I think there's some, not necessarily bad karma surrounding Zoe right now, but I don't think he brings the best energy that you'd want. You've got other options on this team. You've got, you know, Shane Battier in-house already as a team employee. You've got people connected to this group. Let's assume that they asked Wayne Wade and maybe he didn't ask.
I wanted. I'll add one thing here, because you can go to tankathon.com and simulate the lottery. It's like a lazier version of the trade machine.
Okay.
Even quicker, instant gratification. I'm going to do this. I'm going to count how many times it takes me while you're kind of going through the candidates here and why you think Alonzo Mourning is on. But I'm going to go through here, and once the Heat get the top pick, I'll let you know.
All right. So Dwayne Wade presumably asked to partake and did not choose to do so. Udonis Haslem?
Nope.
Couldn't have done it. I mean, I could imagine Udonis going over there and being throwing his mouthpiece to Deputy NBA Commissioner Mark Tatum when he doesn't get the top pick in the draft. I mean, who better represents South Florida? Who better represents this team and everything you want out of it? I mean,
it's been 10 times, still haven't moved up.
Juwan Howard, if you're trying to kind of keep him from leaving as an NBA head coach, kind of throw him a little bone a little bit and say, why don't you represent the front office and the organization in the draft?
Maybe if Cleveland's job was still open, but yeah, now that would have been a good way to be like, hey man, you're really important to us. Don't leave just yet.
Chris Bosh? I mean, you couldn't have gone. So much of this season has been about repairing those kind of relationships. About making sure that he's part of the fold, that his jersey's retired, that you remember how much you love and endear yourself to Chris and the fans of Miami. Come on, you can't have him out there. Or pick somebody on the current roster. Say, you know what, you are our superstar. We believe in you to the point where we think you should represent us in these kinds of functions. You know, DeAndre Ayton representing the Phoenix Suns, he's not the best player.
You don't necessarily need a guy or a person who is employed by the team, right? Like, yeah, you have that, the lady from Seinfeld is there for the Hawks. Mm. She's not employed by the team, right?
No, I think we're married to one of the team owners.
Not an employee. You've got the kid from the little Gilbert kid. Who's
Nick Gilbert?
Nick Gilbert. I don't even know. Is he little now? Is he like the child star who you like look over and you're like, you're 19 now?
Sorry to say, but I think he actually suffers from like a major disease of some kind that keeps him from growing to a full size.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I just don't know how old he is.
Yeah, I think he's like in his 20s now, to be honest with you.
Okay. No, because he was a kid when they.
No, I think
they did the first one in LeBron. No, the first one was LeBron, right? That was like.
In 2003.
16 years ago. He had to be a kid. Oh! All right. It took 37 tries, but the Heat just moved up to number 2.
Nice.
So that does not bode well for my... because they don't get 37 tries tonight. Yeah, I don't love the Alonzo pick. He doesn't smile. I don't think that helps. I think you need... Look, it's Miami. You've got star power. Send Pitbull? No, that would be opposite of karma. Who's cool?
Is anybody
DJ cool? Khaled?
No.
Like no. Here's my point with DJ Khaled. He kind of just falls ass backwards into success. He just seems to be like right guy, right time, kind of right place, right time kind of guy. They should have sent him. 37 tries to get a top 2 pick. If they get that, you'd probably take Ja Morant. The point is that the Heat have never moved up. I think they're due. I have a feeling. I'm not going to say it's a good feeling. I have a feeling about tonight. 10 tries, they've never moved up, and every time Cleveland gets in the lottery, they get the top pick. the hell is that? The Heat are due. Like, if any team, like, you look at the teams that are in the lottery right now. You've got Atlanta, who just makes, who is, you know, doing basically the new version of the process, but nobody cares because it's Atlanta and it's not a big market like Philadelphia, right? You've got a team like the New York Knicks, who traded away their best player for cap space. They've obviously been tanking. You've got Cleveland, who just, they can never seem to, the only reason Cleveland has ever won anything is because LeBron was born in Akron. Phoenix has been tanking for years. Chicago did the tank. All these teams tanked. Washington has been the definition of inept front office for the last decade. So that's like, none of these teams deserve to be in the lottery, except I would argue Memphis, Charlotte, Miami. Like, if the, like, one of those three teams, if not Miami, need to move up. Just the basketball gods need to do it. One of those three teams need to move up. One of these teams that are just doing things right and just had an unfortunate season, right? That happens. Needs to move up. And I don't even know. You know what? Charlotte's not even a good one. Kemba Walker did all the work himself. Throw Charlotte out. They tried to win, but they're terrible at team building. They're like the Wizards, basically. They're the same thing, you know. So I would say Memphis or Miami needs to move up.
So do you think anybody else should represent the Heat other than Zoe?
Anybody actually, not even Memphis, because they traded Marc Gasol in the middle of the season, so they tanked the second half of the season. So only Miami deserves to move up. What did you ask me?
No, I asked if you thought there was anybody other than DJ Khaled and Alonzo who should represent Miami.
Not Alonzo, just DJ Khaled.
Just. What about his association with Hassan Whiteside? Don't you think that would be perhaps looked down upon by the organization?
I mean, I don't think there's any perfect candidate, David.
you know who would do it? Tony Fiorentino.
That would be a good one. Although we'd have to remind him, like, what was at stake and where exactly he was. And
Ron Rothstein, yeah, when he's looking at you know, somebody on set there wearing a skirt.
Jamie Gertz. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There we go. When he's looking at Jamie Gertz and telling us, "Oh, big Seinfeld fan," we don't need that. Sorry, Tony.
We love the man hands episode. Let's take a break. Coming up, we're going to talk about Game of Thrones. We didn't get it to a Monday. Tuesday's edition. We'll get it to it now. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to get this show every day. Subscribe to Locked On Heat on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and constantly updated new features. Download Himalaya, your app store, and subscribe to Locked On Heat. Thank you to our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. You can support them and support us by going to ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. David, it's time for Game of Thrones talk. Everybody listening, if you're not interested, you know, spoiler alert, blah, blah, blah. You can turn it off now. No more basketball. We'll have a recap of the draft lottery tonight for you, or later on. But Game of Thrones. I'm going to start here, David.
All right. And I should preface this, at least yes, for our listeners, that you asked me right away if I had a strong take on this on this episode, or how I leaned as far as whether or not it was positive or negative, and I didn't even answer how I was leaning, but I'm curious to see where you stand on it.
Seeing a lot of positive vibes about this episode.
Really? Okay. I have not, so I'm curious.
Okay. I should say a lot more than we've seen most of the season.
Okay.
I think more people are up on this episode than down. I think Clegane Bowl was everything I wanted and more.
Yes.
I think that was beautifully shot. It was awesome on, like, this stairway to hell or whatever it was supposed to represent. Like, it was freaking cool. You had dragons flying in the background. You got the Darth Vader thing going on when you take off the mountain's helmet. It was, and then the way that they both of them ended up dying was poetic, and it was justified and it felt earned, and I was all in on it. Okay. There was, I think the whole episode was beautifully shot.
Okay.
I thought that it was structured nicely. I thought it took us where we needed to go. I thought pacing, which would have been such an issue for this show over the last couple of seasons, was really good in this episode. However.
Oh, here we go.
This was probably one of my least favorite episodes of Game of Thrones ever.
Okay. Can you pinpoint exactly why it was?
Yes.
Oh. Your least favorite episode ever, not just for the season, but one of your least favorite
episodes. One of my least favorite episodes ever, because there was so much at stake here in the penultimate episode of this series. There was so much at stake here. we knew that people were going to die. We knew that people that we had cared about or at the very least spent a lot of time with were going to die. And the way that they died, minus the Hound, I hated it. And I will point directly towards the Jaime Lannister and the Cersei thing. That was garbage. That was the worst death in the entire show's history. We spent all this time with Cersei being this strong woman, this stubborn woman who would just not give up the throne and was very backwards in the way she thought about the Seven Kingdoms and the role of royalty and the hierarchy and all this stuff. But she was a badass. Like, she blew up a church. Like, she was awesome. And for her to die, first of all, the Jaime Lannister thing, his character arc was one of the best things about the show, one of the best character arcs I can remember on TV, and they completely butchered it with him completely just like saying, you know what, all that changing and stuff I did, turns out, not really.
Can I tell you what I think happened?
Okay.
Because in talking it over, and I started thinking about this, and one, I think the Jaime thing, the reason why it was handled the way it was that they had this clear idea that already Jaime was going to stay behind in Winterfell after having spent the evening or a few evenings with Brienne of Tarth, Sir Brienne, right, at this point. And that would have taken him out of the final battle there. So they had to have a reason for him to go back to Winter. I'm sorry, back to King's Landing.
But you, so like, it's not like they did that. Like, what? They just, like, they ran out of time to write?
They cut the season short. They didn't want to continue this. And they forced this idea of why he had to go back to King's Landing. That all of a sudden, after two, maybe three seasons of kind of this redemption arc taking place, and then all of a sudden going back, you know what? I do realize now that the most important thing is the sister that I love more than anything else, and I want
to go
back to her.
That's fine. Then don't have sex with Brienne. Like, the writers take
that
out.
I think they kind of threw...
It was the wrong beat, and that's why I'm saying it felt unearned at the end. That's all I'm saying. I have no problem with Jaime dying with Cersei. It's just that the way it went. Like, don't write the sex scene in there for no reason. Like, that whole relationship culminated with him knighting her. That was the feel-good part. Nobody cared if they did it. Nobody cared about that.
No, I disagree there. I think that there was tension that was building up. Like, you kind of saw her looking at him for several years.
Then leave the tension there. Leave it.
Okay. Maybe they wanted to wrap it up. I can't tell you what they... I mean, I'm sure they've explained it.
My biggest thing was the Cersei thing.
Okay. As for Cersei... My explanation is this. She couldn't have been killed any other way but the way she did because it was a passive death. She is a pregnant woman, and you cannot have her slaughtered by Dany, slaughtered by Jon Snow, slaughtered by Jaime, slaughtered by anybody. You couldn't have her killed as she's carrying an unborn child in front of an audience like that. And so they created this death that was relatively benign and passive as she's crushed by rocks in the keep.
Fair.
And the catacombs. Yeah, buried alive by rocks.
Counterpoint. There was never a reason for her to be pregnant. They didn't use that detail ever.
Fair. It was
Jaime and Brienne having sex was no reason for that. No reason for that. It was, and that's what I'm saying. Like, this show used to be so tightly knit with the storytelling. Well, like, everything that happened mattered.
We know what happened. I mean, it's the lack of source material. I mean, that's just a reality.
Right. And I've been blaming them. Like, I am upset about it. Like, the Jaime death, first of all, Cersei needed to die at the hands of somebody. She didn't get to just die under rocks. That sucks.
Well,
like, she had spent her entire character arc.
But you understand my perspective, right?
People.
Like, as a pregnant woman.
No, I get it with the pregnant thing. But then don't make her pregnant for no reason. They never use that. Like, well, you know, she's got. And they're like, well, she's staying alive for her baby. Well, I think it would have been enough of a motivation to just say she was staying alive to stay alive.
Yeah,
that's enough motivation.
But, I mean, they've used this as a recurring theme for many episodes, that the thing that matters most has always been her children. And that's why she was willing to be part of, or at least publicly agreed to be part of Dany's army against the Whites. I mean, I think that's why they need to have the pregnancy, the child there in the first
place.
And
they realized after, like, oh, well, we can't really get rid of the pregnancy part.
Yes.
So now we're kind of
screwed
here.
Yes, exactly.
Bad writing. Like, the Jaime Lannister thing is, that's like season 8 of Dexter bad.
I've never seen any episode of Dexter. Okay. But I'll take your word for it. I've heard it's bad towards the end.
Those who know, if you know, you know. But I hated that. I hate that Cersei was this, like, evil, yes. Badass, strong woman, absolutely. And she dies, like, just weeping in the arms of this dude who shows up at her rescue. I hated that. I think that showed a lack of perspective. I think I've heard, and I'm not completely sure on this, I don't think that there's a woman in the writer's room for Game of Thrones. And that to me showed, like, all right, you took one of the strongest female characters on the show, right? Not necessarily the most liked, but the strong, arguably the strongest female character on the show, and you let, and you had her die weeping in the arms of some, of, you know, Prince Charming. I hated that. I freaking hated that.
All right, let's move on real quickly here. I have a question for you. What do you think about Daenerys's decision to just say, oh, I hear the bells, no, don't really care, time for me to go ahead and roast the city alive anyway?
Didn't agree with her logic there.
What logic? I don't think there was one. It's like everybody was in agreement. Hey guys, I can just imagine the team huddle, you know, Tyrion's going around to everybody. He's like, hey guys, if you hear the bells, that means it's over. We don't have to kill any innocent people. We've won. We've taken over the throne. Everything we've worked so hard for. And kind of Daenerys is going, nah, screw it. I want to kill people.
And they're setting that up right now so that, like, Jon and Arya realize that she is freaking crazy and that Varys was right. Right? That's what they just set up there.
Theoretically. No, that's another question, though. The end of the episode.
Do you think before we get to the end of this episode, not the end of... next week's. Okay.
Do you think Arya is heading towards the keep so that she can kill Daenerys?
Well, it's the only place to go.
Well, I thought she was riding out of the city.
She's riding out of the city. Where's Daenerys going? The keep is done, right? The keep has been knocked down. I think the whole thing has been knocked down. That was my understanding.
Well, she has to stay for the final iconic shot of her being on the.
Is the throne there still? Do we know that? Well, it feels like everything's been destroyed. No, I don't know.
It's probably still there. It's probably still there. Again, we'll see. Because of the inconsistency in the writing, our feeling is that a lot of people feel that the throne will still be there. Perhaps it's been melted, and that's more of a metaphor for Daenerys kind of burning down her chances of being the kind of queen as she was supposed to be, etc. I mean, there's a lot that could happen. Now, I thought that when the Hound, Sandor Clegane, kind of shook Arya to the core and said, look, this life of vengeance and everything that you've sought for so long isn't the path for you. I thought her mounting the white horse as you know, obviously, you know, the images of her riding a white horse. I thought it was more about her choosing life and leaving King's Landing for good.
I agree with that.
And giving up.
She's not going to kill Cersei. Okay. She's not killing Cersei. Daenerys.
Yeah, okay. So she's not the one to do it. So it's going to be a showdown between Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen. Oh, I'm sorry, Aegon Targaryen, realistically. Yeah. Aegon Targaryen versus Danny Targaryen. And in the middle of it is a dragon.
He identifies more as a Jon.
Please don't fight.
I don't know. I guess. I hated the Daenerys thing too, man. Like, again, I think the legacy of the show is going to be that it did the female characters really wrong.
Ooh, I don't know, man. I'm kind of buying. They've built up
Daenerys
all these
things. Daenerys, here's my logic for that. Cersei, I already explained.
Yes.
The Daenerys thing, like, now she's... And I'm stealing this take from my girlfriend, so I'll say that.
Ooh, okay.
I don't even have
her on the show.
She's been asking. she's got takes. But she made a good point. She's like, Daenerys is like this... Was she always a little vindictive?
Yes.
Was she always... But she always seemed somewhere there was balance, right? And the only balancing scene, I thought it was interesting, that after she blew off Daenerys' or Varys' head or whatever happened with the fire there, after she torched Varys, the next scene was her by a fire having this tender moment with Grey Worm, giving him Missandei's, like, necklace thing or whatever it was.
The chain that she broke, right? Or the collar?
The chain, that's what that was. And so I'm like, all right, so that's the tender moment that we get to hang on to with Daenerys. And it was clearly, it was very obviously put in there to be like, well, she's not all bad. And then she goes all bad.
Well, I think there's a reasoning for that also, in the sense that the people that probably grounded her best are both dead as a result of Cersei and Cersei's, you know.
Fair.
You know,
but do we think
Jorah, Mormont, and
do we think that, like, those three people, basically, were the only ones keeping Daenerys from torturing the, like, just torching the planet with a dragon? No! Like, it's just, like, I get that they were important to her, but, like, would she, why did she just, like, completely lose her mind? Like, there was no, it seemed it was, like, a step too far. And I think that's fair to say when you torch an entire civilization. But, like, it just seemed too much. It didn't feel earned enough, you know?
Yeah, I don't quite understand it either. Like, I understand she would have, I think, following the kind of vindictive arc that we've seen throughout 7+ seasons, I don't have a problem with her destroying all of King's Landing. But I feel like once the Golden Company was destroyed, once the Lannister army had given up, once everything was off, and the bells had rung already, and there was nothing, no one left to fight, and it's really just Cersei, the Mountain, Kyber, and tens of thousands of peasants.
Yes.
Should she have just, like, stood over there in the dragon and kind of call out to everybody and say, I'm your new queen, leave your homes now, and then destroy the city? Why, like, destroy the city and kill a bunch of people who would have, you know, been much more grateful for the opportunity to live if they had to give up King's Landing? Like,
and then just...
Yeah, destroy the city. Who cares about
the city?
And
then do this beeline to the Red Keep and just torch Cersei right there. I did not need Jaime and Cersei to die together.
They can't do that. You cannot have... Again, how are you going to feel...
How is dying in a vicious flame any better than dying under rocks?
Well, it's not her fault. It's not Daenerys's... No, I'm saying not... You're right. It's not better or worse. I'm just saying they couldn't... Somehow, we already hate, or at least the general consensus from most people is that we're supposed to hate Daenerys because she's taken this bad turn and she's all of a sudden now the Mad Queen, etc. But I still think that the specific personal violence of trying to, or of roasting Cersei and her unborn child alive would have been too much for HBO.
Also, Jaime taking 47 stab wounds to each side and then walking...
It's two. Come on. Was that really that? Considering all the...
Okay, it was at least six. I counted six.
I thought it was two. Like, two...
It was
like
two separate occasions. Mortal wounds. Euron, like, got him a couple times. Like, he went, like, stab on one side, and then stab on the other side. A couple stabs.
So, how come the Mountain wasn't able to kill his little brother as easily as he did the Viper back in season 3? Like, he was ready to go with his go-to move, which is, I'm going to crush your skull like a grape.
Ready for that.
And you know, take out your eyes, and he was working his way in there pretty easily, but I thought it would have been something he could have done much more easily. And
he's just not as spry as he used to be.
Well, he is pretty much a 400-pound corpse at this point, so I mean, it's a little hard to kill, as Sandor Clegane noticed himself, you know, right before diving into the pits of hell.
Final thoughts before we just finish this up. Disappointed that that's how some of my favorite characters died. Didn't like it. Don't care about some of the writing stumbles that they stumbled into there. Your fault that you made Cersei pregnant, not mine. Figure out a better way to kill her. Also, hasn't seemed to stop you from doing like screwed up stuff in the past. Didn't they kill Jon's wife when she was pregnant? Like,
no,
stabbed her in the stomach?
Not Jon.
Rob's wife. Hasn't stopped them before. You
can
do it again.
Yeah, but then that's why we hated them as much as we did. And the Red Wedding was as
gruesome. And then you had the Sansa thing, and it was a whole thing. Like I'm saying, it hasn't stopped them before.
I have no idea how it's...
I'd rather have that. Like, I'm okay. Like, look, I understand that you can't... Like, I get it, but you've shown it before. Also, the characters are not real. It's not actually happening, so we don't have to get all up in arms about it.
Whoa, I don't know, man. Now you're talking crazy talk there. If you're going to start bringing out the it's not reality card, well, I mean, then why bother watching the show at all? There are no real dragons, Wes. I hate to break it to you.
I can still enjoy the dragons, understanding that they're not existing.
Oh, can I mention that as well?
Okay.
Just real quickly? Like, how the hell is this Drogon, the last dragon, right? That's his name. Okay. How is it that he's so powerful?
Drogon,
whatever. I mean, how is it he's so powerful and was able to continuously have this inexhaustible source of dragon flame? Is it because of Daenerys' own anger kind of fueling him? Because, like, we've seen...
How much do you know about
past.
Dragons?
I not much.
I don't know anything about dragons, so I'm the wrong person
clearly.
To ask.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know where the fire... I am confused how fire comes out of them. I don't understand that.
That is a good point, because you think
where
there'd have to
from?
Be some kind of fuel. Like, is there blood, like some kind of a flammable liquid of some kind?
Does he run on premium?
Yeah.
I don't know.
they do have blood because we saw in the last episode,
right,
when Rhaegal took a scorpion bolt through the neck. Well, we saw plenty of blood then.
Yeah, I'm not buying this. You can't murder pregnant Cersei. They've shown a lot worse. One more point.
Yes.
I don't know why. Okay, never mind.
Oh, come on. Come on. You can't do that to our listeners.
No, like, just the Drogon doing, like, he's flying above the city, but he's also, like, they're going through, like, this, like, it's a maze. Like, he's kind of, like, you've got the Red Keep right there. Buzz, just go right towards it. Beeline right towards it. You don't have to, like, go through the streets. You're above it. You don't need to, what is that? I understand, like, they're torturing the whole city, but, like.
I think that's exactly what it was, though. Like, he kind of, like, working his way. Like, oh, let me get this row, let me get this row.
He did.
He's crossing his T's and dotting his I's, Wes. He wants to kill everybody.
That's the thing people don't know about Drogon. Detail-oriented.
There you go.
Thanks for listening. Connect with us on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOEat or email us at LockedOnEat@gmail.com. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.